Hello and welcome to an edition of Baby Talk. We are recording this on Monday, October 11th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatow, actually up in Saratoga. Came up here for the long weekend. It's been wonderful attending fall festivals and all that kind of exciting stuff while also watching all manner of horse racing. We're going to review some of the racing that we've seen the last couple of weekends a little bit later in the show, take a look at some of these juvenile divisions for the approach to the Breeders' Cup. But we also have a race to talk about. We've got the Jessamine Stakes at Keeneland on Wednesday. We're going to start with that. And to go over all of this, we bring in the usual co-host on this program from the sponsors of this show, Gainsway Farm. He's Sean Tugel. Sean, how are things?
Oh, doing great, Pete. We had awesome weather here for opening weekend, Fall Stars weekend. Saw some great performances. I was right down on the apron to watch Latruska continue to dominate the distaff division. I know we'd like to talk about babies, and it was a busy weekend of baby races. A lot of good racing at in New York and in at Kentucky at Keeneland. So the picture's starting to get a little bit clearer as we're only about a month away from Breeders' Cup.
Scheduling note, we'll probably take a little pause after this show, and then we'll come back with special Baby Talk coverage of the Breeders' Cup. We're talking about potentially doing a special show once we have pre-entries that will focus on the European babies and what we need to know about them come Breeders' Cup time. And then, of course, we'll have a show covering, what is it now, the five relevant races in the two-year-old division in the way that folks have become accustomed to hearing on these shows. We're going to kick this off, though, talking about the Jessamine. It goes at 4:44. I love these very civilized race days we have at Keeneland during the week. How fantastic to have a race day start at 1 and end at 4:44. I'm actually not going to be there. I probably planned this stupidly. I probably should have come in Wednesday morning to be able to get to this race and get to an extra day of Keeneland. But I think I was just worried about having family stuff to do. So I'll be there a little bit later in the day, making my Keeneland debut later in the week. But this is certainly exciting to have an important grade two on a Wednesday afternoon. Sean Tugel, where does your eye go in the Jessamine?
Well, I do think that Kentucky Downs and those races are going to have a huge impact on this race. It's pretty hard to look past the three-horse Turner Lutz, 5-2 on the morning line with Florent Giroux, having already been 2-for-2 and winning very convincingly by 5 lengths at Kentucky Downs. It says in the running lines, one for fun. So certainly, a salty, a solid buyer speed figure, 71. So pretty hard to go past that. But I am drawn to the outside as well in some price horses that do come out of some Kentucky Downs races. Those would be the 12 Dressed. You get Flavien Prat aboard this filly by More Than Ready. We just saw that More Than Ready had some nice winners this past weekend, pointing them for the Breeders' Cup, and he's had a lot of success already there in the juvenile races. So Dressed, it does definitely needs to step up and run a little bit higher buyer speed figures, but you could see that occurring here, especially getting to go the two-turn mile, being out of Lawn Row Mare. That's turf top and bottom. That's Aussie top and bottom by More Than Ready and Lawn Row. It'd be interesting to see, if you looked at some Australian breeding stats, kind of the More Than Ready over Lawn Row angle and how that works down there. I'm sure it's tried there more than it has been here. And I also like a big bomb, the 13 Boxing Day, 1-for-1, one at 6.5 furlongs there. Kentucky Downs on the 11th of September for Brendan Walsh. Bottom side, AP Indy, so the distance shouldn't be an issue. And Street Boss is a very underappreciated sire at times, but it's 4 wide at the quarter pole, drew clear to win by 1.25 lengths there in its first start at Kentucky Downs, and we know that it's not the easiest place to win first time out. So I do like Turner Loose probably as the top choice. Hard to look much past her, but I do think the 12 and 13 are definitely some interest for me, and at 20-1 I think Boxing Day has a big shot to maybe fill some exotic roles.
You make some good cases on all three of those. I was with you very much on the top pick, Turner Loose. I think that's going to be a nice draw too in a race where I think we agree that some of the more interesting runners drawn outside. And you know, you can get the trip from those difficult posts, as we've seen very recently. But another thing that just appeals to me is I do think Turner Lewis, with the ability to pass runners and save ground, could be tough to deny from in there. I want to just underline a point you made about Drest. Just one thing that I noticed looking through these PPs that also suggests her. So whatever, we had these timing issues at the Kentucky Downs meet where we don't have pace figures. So I don't feel as confident in evaluating the flows of races. But I did notice that in the Drest allowance run, that was a pace that pretty much held together. It was horses 1, 2, and 3 all the way around there, except Drest. And sometimes that makes me, very often that makes me want to upgrade a horse when they're not only putting up that number. It'll also make me a little more forgiving of maybe a figure that comes out a little light when you know that they were doing it against the flow of the race. It does sometimes suggest that there's a little bit more under the hood. Drest is one I would definitely want in my reckoning under Turner Lewis. And then I had a couple others to mention. Another maiden winner from Kentucky Downs, Mist Haven. This is Bobby's Kitten's sister. But I don't think that you look at the rest of the horses in this family. I don't think that necessarily implies distance limitations or anything like that. I'm feeling like to win at that Kentucky Downs course. Now, I know there's a downhill portion of it. Somebody disagreed with me when I had said that I feel like the 6.5 at Kentucky Downs, because of that stiff finish, I feel like those horses are typically going to get a mile. Somebody made the point about part of it's downhill. But at any rate, Mist Haven, that was an impressive run for me on debut and is one that I want to probably have somewhere. And then I don't think we're going to get 2 AEs in, but you never know. Haughty, number 16. This was a very impressive maiden winner for me at Belmont back on September 17th. I've no kind of break. Wasn't exactly in a great place. Wasn't really bet 9-1 for a well-bred Gainsway bred horse by Empire Maker out of the King Mambo. Damn, I thought Haughty looked really, really interesting potentially in this spot. And if she doesn't draw in here, she's going to show up somewhere. So this is one I just wanted to mention for people to potentially pop on their horse tracker. Any comments on the ones that I mentioned or any others you want to give a shout in before we get to recapping?
Yeah, you know, I think both barns that have the AEs are jumping up and down hoping to get in. I know David and Gordo of Belladonna Racing and the husband of Cherie DeVos, who's having a good meet, had a nice winner there the other day. They're pretty excited to try to get her into the race. And certainly Haughty, I mean, definitely, you know, doesn't show up as a winner on her PPs, but cleared the line almost 4 lengths in front last time out. So certainly if they do get in, you're going to have the very wide post draw, but both of them like each other quite a bit. And I also like the other speaking of Empire Maker horses, I do think you got to give a little bit of a look at the 8-horse Queen Judith. That race, I mean, she kind of at the quarter pole, you would have never thought that she was going to win, and she somehow surged to get up to win by a neck. And I like 15-1. That was on a yielding turf course. I do think the turf course will be interesting to see how, if there's some turf races earlier in the day. You know, we got a lot of rain late in the week down here in Lexington last week, and there was a lot of give in the turf course over the weekend. But it's been 80 and sunny for multiple days in a row, and there's no rain in the forecast. So I do think the turf course will be much firmer than it was opening weekend.
This is the 4th turf race on the Wednesday card, which gives me a chance also to plug this all-turf pick 3 that I've been so excited about. Was really tickled to see how well it handled really all 3 days over the weekend, but especially on Saturday. On the Wednesday card, the all-turf pick 3 will start at 2:36 p.m. with race number 4, something for horse players to pay attention to. Whole bunch of thoughts there. Maybe there's a logical segue jumping from the Jessamine to the 2-year-old Philly turf division. Who in your mind, Sean, is at the top of the list right now as far as horses you're potentially interested in that spot?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what does come from Europe. You know, we'll see what they have. You know, the Americans, just looking at the juvenile, you know, Philly's turf over the years, it has – been dominated by, you know, American fillies, and it hasn't been since 2013 when Charlie Hills shipped in to win, that an American filly hasn't won this. But certainly if Charlie Appleby was to show up with Wild Beauty, who won the Natama at Woodbine, I think she's one to be reckoned with, but we'll see if she shows up. I think you gotta, you know, for me, we talked about it on the show last week, and Cairo Memories was a visually impressive first time out winner, and I thought her second time out was pretty good as well. She improved her buyer speed figure. You know, she'll have to take another step forward, but you know, she certainly hasn't done anything wrong. I don't think the New York race is going to be as productive in the Breeders' Cup as in normal years. And certainly I think the adjustment is going to have a lot to say about who we like going into the Breeders' Cup once that race is run. But for me, as far as an American-based filly, I'd have to say Cradle Memories for me, outside of what's going to happen in the adjustment, would be the leading filly.
Makes sense. Wild Beauty definitely on the top of a short list for me. We are hearing that Tenebrism might be making the trip over from the Coolmore team. That's one we'll be looking at a lot closer as we get a bit closer. I wanted to ask you about consumer spending for Chad Brown. Now, it felt like at the time when he was spotting his fillies the other weekend that sending her down to the Laurel race maybe suggested that she was a little bit more of a second teamer as opposed to McCulloch and Kinchin, who ran in New York. You've tipped your hand a little bit that you think that maybe that Miss Grillo isn't going to end up being the strongest of the preps coming into that race. But what do you make of consumer spending now after winning very easily and continuing to stair step up those buyer speed figures? Are you going to hold the fact that she got sent out of town against her, or do you think she's a serious contender?
Well, I mean, for Chad Brown has won many juvenile Phillies turfs. You know, he had New Money Honey, obviously he had Rushing Fall, he had Newspaper Record, and I've never seen him take the Salima to the Breeders' Cup route. So, you know, this will be a first, but, you know, it could work out that way. I think she's a likely horse who can fill some exotic spots as far as winning. I mean, she'll probably be 15-1 or more come Breeders' Cup Day. I'd hate to put my foot in my mouth there, but I definitely don't think she'd be a top 3 to 5 Phillies choice, depending on who shows up. But you know, what do you think?
I think you're probably right. It's one of those things where I think the reports from the week and how whatever the Brown team is doing relative to each other, it'd probably be more of a game time decision to me. But if you're right in your guess of the price, and it sounds like as good of a guess as any to me, you know, I would be extremely tempted to leave in a trainer in Chad Brown who's had so much success in the race, at least in my underneath tickets and my deeper exotics. Obviously, the homer in me wants Kinchin to run in this race and do really well. I actually had dinner with Jonathan last night. For some reason, it didn't come up. I was kind of surprised. But we'll obviously have the word from him about how she's doing and have a chance to see. Look, I get it. On numbers, it's tough to make the case that she's going to tackle a Wild Beauty, for example, should she show up in this spot. But I am enough of a homer that she'll be on my tickets in some way, shape, or form if she goes in the race. I thought, all things considered, she ran a pretty good race last time. I know the clock hasn't loved either of the efforts, and I am very much of a figure-oriented guy, so I'm not going to beat this drum too loudly. But I just do believe she's got more under the hood. Any others you want to talk about, or shall we move on to the next division?
I think we can move on.
Let's do it. And the next one we're going to talk about is the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, a race that we've seen all the prep action for so far, at least domestically. Another one where it's going to be tough to get too into it until we know what's coming over from Europe. But we've seen some clues so far. What stood out to you?
Yeah, this is a very interesting race. I think we have a lot of pretty good horses here. Certainly you were all over Tis the Bomb last time out, and you know, I don't know what would be going through your mind when that horse broke through the gate and then you know, very rarely do you ever see one break through the gate and then go on to win. So that was, you know.
Yeah, this wasn't a couple of strides. This wasn't like,
he was down to the wire. I was right on the, he was down to the wire. So,
of course. Look, there was definitely energy wasted. So I'm telling you right now, I'm going to upgrade that figure, which came back a 76. I'm, in my brain, that's more like an 80 to go through that and run the way that he did. I hope you don't think I'm exaggerating.
Oh, no, there. No. I mean, he moved way up the point scale there to overcome all that and run a very good race. And you know, that I always like when horses can overcome adversity. If you can take that out of the equation and feel comfortable that a horse can overcome adversity, that definitely moves him up the handicapping ranks.
I think my discussion of this race needs to start with Annapolis, who I was very impressed by. And there were some suggestions about the margin of finish and how close Portfolio Company got to him as to how much he developed from the maiden win. You look at what the clock says, he developed a lot. That was a very big race. I think they're two very good horses. We'll see what ends up coming over, but I think they are a very potent 1-2 punch domestically at the top of the division for me. And as much as I like Tis the Bomb, I think he's going to have to do. You know, I said I gave him an 80. Well, I think you can pretty much count on Portfolio Company and Annapolis running in the 90s, at, you know, certainly in a race like the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. So he's going to have, he and so many of these others are going to have a ton to find. I'm a big fan and excited to see what happens next for that pair. And I do think I'm a little bit more, I'm just a little bit more keen on Annapolis, though. I think you could probably tell a Portfolio Company story as well. In terms of, you know, maybe he's a horse who's better not having to make the running, and maybe based on that, he could reverse form. Some of the other names that, you know, are going to end up on people's lists for this, they just haven't run that fast. You know, a runner like McKinnon for me is just going to have to do so much better, and even Albahar, who, you know, did the business first up in North America, but I think on the clock needs to improve. Any others in here that you're interested in, or any Euros you've heard about that might be coming over that are worth discussing?
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you that both, I think, Annapolis and Portfolio Company, as far as domestic horses, look at the top of the list. McKinnon, as much as he's done right on the West Coast, definitely looks like he's got to step it up a little bit. Don't really know as far as the Euros, who's coming, who's not. So wouldn't want to get too far out ahead of myself. But I do think the one horse that probably will fly under the radar is the horse Dakota Gold, who's going to come in from the Now 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 Stakes at Monmouth. You know, they gave him a 90 buyer there. He ran an 81 first time out. He hadn't done anything wrong, and I think he certainly has every right to run a big race that day.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's a good spot on that figure. I mean, that's for this time of year for a 2-year-old. That's serious racehorse time. And I think you're right. I mean, people aren't really thinking about Monmouth probably as a likely place that's going to produce Breeders' Cup juvenile winners. But the clock says that this horse has every ability to have an impact. Son of Freud out of a Lemon Drop Kid Dam, so the little bit extra distance should be well within Dakota Gold's scope in the big race as well. We did two turf races. Let's make it three. The Juvenile Turf Sprint. We saw a potential runner in this yesterday at Belmont in Slipstream, who did a good job. Got that was a conversation I did have with JK, and I actually made him pay for dinner when he told me how many times he had that pick five that capped with Slipstream. So that worked out super duper well. You figure Wes Ward, this is like, it feels like the race that was written for the Wes Ward runners. I imagine there's a few of those you're going to want to talk about here.
Yeah, I mean, Slipstream was a Chi-Town. Was it Chi-Town City? Is the horse that we kind of were wanting and didn't run a very good race, got left at the gate. And Slipstream, we said kind of, you know, if she doesn't show up there, who do we like? We like Slipstream. Now, I was listening to the telecast and it sounded like Clement was wanting to go to the Breeders' Cup juvenile turf as opposed to the turf sprint with Slipstream. So we'll see if that is the route that he ends up going. You know, I think one of the most impressive races that we saw over the weekends was Averly Jane at Keeneland, and going five furlongs. Good luck catching her.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was wrong about her. I was skeptical about the turf for whatever reason. But, you know, Ward does this. He you know, he seems to be able to seamlessly move them around. And it's a good point. It's such a sharp five. Speed is so deadly. And who's going to possibly be – who's going to be ahead of, of Averly Jane?
Well, and the other horse when we're to think is you know – it could be just a monster speed duel because one timer is an awfully fast horse too. So it'll be interesting to see. Those are my top two picks, but they both probably want the same trip.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. This is a race that's very hard to pick from far out because pace scenario is going to come into it for sure. But I'll say this. I mean, Jonathan keeps coming up on the show. Gosh, maybe we get him as part of our Breeders' Cup stuff if we can. But he taught me so much about, especially the shorter turf sprints in terms of like, don't overthink it. Mm-hmm. You want the horse, basically his attitude in these races is you want the horse with the best overall numbers and you want the horse with the fastest early pace number. And it's kind of amazing how often in turf sprints that strategy works out. We won't know those things obviously until a little bit further down the line. It will be interesting to see if any of the Euros who will be showing up can have an impact in a race like this. But I think that the five furlong really sharp Del Mar configuration probably works against them. Of course, I've been wrong about discounting Euros turf sprinting at the Breeders' Cup before. No further than Glass Slippers last year that it seems like everyone I know scored out on except for me. I was being stubborn there, and I'm not going to be stubborn in this spot. But you got to figure that it's a bit of a different discipline, tight left-handed turn, super sharp, firm ground.
And that even brings up another filly that we haven't even talked about and is a filly that broke her maiden here back in May and then went over to DeVille to win five furlongs and is undefeated going five furlongs other than her second place finish at Ascot. And that's Twilight Gleaming. You know, she's kind of been based almost in Europe over the summertime, but she's working steadily at Keeneland. She's had two back-to-back five furlong works at Keeneland on the turf. So she's another one that, you know, has been away from the races for a little bit, but she's been as impressive of a filly that I've seen stateside that then went over to Europe. So we'll see if she ends up showing up there as well. You know, I think they were hoping to see her in the Indian summer, but obviously with Averly Jane, I think Ward picked the right spot there. But the Twilight Gleaming, the daughter of National Defense, who went over to Ascot and then won at DeVille, she's won, you know, hasn't been in the headlines for a while, but don't forget about her. She's been pretty impressive in her starts.
It's a very, very fair and good point. Let's talk about the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. This one, a division with a handful of clearer leaders. I feel a little more confident talking about what the market's going to do, et cetera, in this spot as opposed to some of the other races we were talking about. Echo Zulu, I feel like, keeps getting these form boosts with horses out of all of her three races coming back and continuing to run so well. The more I think about the two turns for her, the more I think it's going to be a positive. And I just think she's going to take an awful lot of beating. There's plenty of others to talk about. But for me, the conversation starts with Echo Zulu. How impressed have you been with her? And how much does seeing so many of the horses she ran against continue to not necessarily win, but improve their figures impact the way that you view?
I mean, certainly I don't want to say she's head and heels above the rest of the group, but her numbers suggest that she should be a very heavy favorite that day. Our good friend Jake Ballas, his filly Hidden Connection, we saw connect now with both a colt and a filly towards the top of their divisions. I love the spacing from her last race to this race. It will be interesting to see what happens with the jockey. I don't know if they're going to stick with Ray Lou Gutierrez or they're going to find more of a journeyman type that has the experience. But you know, I just heard her last race. I know some people said it wasn't real fast and the times, but I mean, she did absolutely nothing wrong. And I just thought the way she powered home and separated herself was pretty impressive. I don't know what to make of the race out in California. That's the big kind of question mark. I overlooked Ain't Easy in the Chandelier Stakes, and she certainly put herself onto everybody's dashboard with that impressive win. I don't know if that was more of a lot of other horses just never ran a lick that day, or just aren't quite the caliber of the Grade One horses that we're used to, but it's pretty hard for me to get past Echo Zulu and Hidden Connection, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they're the top two. They're the top two. And Hidden Connection, but just a progressive type. That wasn't a bad figure. I mean, in 87, within hailing distance of the 90 that Echo Zulu has been putting up. And we'll see what happens in terms of the pace and what it's going to look like here. For me, the Chandelier was just a little too slow to get super excited about. I will probably be in a position to get beaten once again if Ain't Easy comes back and runs well. And then Friday, of course, we had the Alcibiades and Juju's Map, who I had discounted in favor of the stablemate, ran an absolute blinder. A nice stalk and pounce trip, solid speed figure, and just another runner that looks progressive. How far behind those top two do you have Juju's Map rated at this point?
Not. It's pretty close. You're almost splitting hairs. But just for the sake of the show, I think I probably would make Hidden Connection my top choice at the moment. Maybe just the edge of having gone two turns versus the one turn races in a row over Echo Zulu. But Juju Map hasn't done anything wrong. And certainly deserves to be right in the same conversation with the others. So I think this is a very good – I think those top three fillies, maybe even top four fillies, it's a pretty good rendition of this Breeders' Cup. I don't think there's – even as good as how good Echo Zulu is, she's not that far ahead of the others, in my opinion.
And there are those questions to answer. It's true. I think for me it'll probably come down to what kind of a trip I think she's going to get and how much other speed is there going to be to really bring the stamina of that second turn into the question. Obviously being, I'm being a homer on this show for the sake of Black Type Thoroughbreds, and Jake is a friend and they've been clients and probably will be again. It'd be wonderful to see her run well too. And it's going to be, as it typically is, a pretty interesting race to handicap. You get these years too in that race where you just get an absolute boil over and some wild stuff happening. The more extreme the pace scenario looks in either direction, the more I'm going to allow for that and get creative to see if it could be one of these years when it ain't going to be a year where you get somebody loose on the lead, but maybe it's a year where somebody can come from absolute out of the clouds. One more race to talk about in a couple minutes to do it. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I just am continually finding myself impressed with Jack Christopher. I don't know if you saw the piece the other day about them actually raising up the last speed figure to be a 102. I mean, that's faster than almost every running of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. The last one to run to break 100 in this race was Good Magic, a horse that apparently Chad Brown thinks of in similar talent ability as this one. Classic Empire had a 102 back in 2016. Texas Red with the fastest one in recent memory with a 104 all the way back in 2014. But I think Jack Christopher is the real deal. I understand some have questions about the ability to get the distance. I'm not really seeing it. I think he shapes like it's going to be absolutely fine. And my other main opinion in the Juvenile is a bit of an anti-opinion on Corniche, who you mentioned you weren't thrilled with the work going into the last. Somebody might say, aha, Sean was wrong. Look, the horse won. Not necessarily. The horse regressed 13 points in terms of buyer speed figure. I think he was just better than those, but the condition arrow is not in the right direction on Corniche. I'm all about Jack Christopher at this point. With respect for Command Performance as an interesting one to potentially run in underneath once again, if not to turn the tables. What are your thoughts from this far out on the Breeders' Cup Juvenile?
Yeah, and I don't want to overlook Rattle and Roll either. I thought his performance in the futurity was quite solid, separated himself from the field. But I mean, we haven't seen a brilliant performance as the one that we've seen from Jack Christopher. Both races just outstanding. Has that speed. Certainly with the 102 Beyer speed figure, he might even regress 5 to 7 points and still be able to win this race. But you do have to question a little bit of the two turns. You know, Munnings can get a mile and 16 two-turn great stakes winner. He's done it quite a bit. His sire, Spitestown, has gotten plenty of two-turn horses there. So he's definitely the one to be knocked off the pedestal. I still am not a bit like, as even though Corniche is 2 for 2, I wasn't thrilled with that race. And I think I texted you before they even crossed the wire. So that's why they run the races in the afternoon, not in the mornings. but I'm telling you, I didn't put enough money on Good Magic the day he won at the Breeders' Cup. And I'm not going to make that same mistake if Command Performance shows up. I think that horse, as far as long term derby potential, he is one of the most exciting 2-year-old colts out there.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree. Really exciting stuff, and goes with a big chance when it comes to this Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Sean, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. We're going to be talking all about the Breeders' Cup, having so much fun doing shows with you. And thanks to you once again, and thanks also to our friends at Gainsway for signing off on these shows. It's been a great season with more yet to come. And we'll keep going after the Breeders' Cup too, because we've got good stuff at Churchill. We've got those big 2-year-old races in New York. It used to be Thanksgiving weekend. Now I think they've moved it back a week, but definitely looking forward to speaking with you more.
Yeah, I can't wait. These have been fun shows to do, and certainly will be interesting to see how everybody trains up to the Breeders' Cup, and hopefully everyone stays healthy to that point, and we get to have a fantastic championship weekend.
That's going to be fun too, getting your thoughts on seeing some of these workers when we're out there at the Breeders' Cup. We'll make sure to bring in that type of analysis as well. Thank you, Sean Tugel, one more time. Thanks to our friends at Gainsway one more time. Thanks most of all to all of you for listening, for giving feedback on the shows. We got some nice feedback about some of those winners on Baby Talk and others from last weekend. We appreciate that. Again, if you have comments, questions, we're extremely open to all that feedback. Hit us up. I'm at Looms Boldly on Twitter. He's at Sean Tugel. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.